Freud compares religion to a universal obsessional neurosis. Right? He's especially thinking of all the rituals that people do. Obsessional people or obsessive compulsives are people who have all sorts of rituals. Right, the kind of person who has to wash their hands 4 times before going to bed, the kind of person who has a definite routine, they can't get up in the morning without doing exactly the same thing every morning, that's ritualistic, right? Well, if you think of ritualistic life as based in institutions like churches and synagogues, then it looks like an obsessional neurosis. These people have to repeat these same patterns over and over and over again. Don't they get tired of it? Why are they so interested in these repeated patterns, these rituals? It must be that they're expressing some deep, hidden anxiety, an anxiety hidden even from themselves, an anxiety that might be expressed by a story about, say, a man being crucified by his father, right? If you're feeling guilty about your anger towards your father, right? The story of a man being crucified at the hands of his father might be a disguised expression of your anxiety. And then the rituals built around it are ways of giving disguised expression to that anxiety. Now, Freud thinks that this neurosis called religion is not exactly the same as an individual neurosis. It's a universal obsessional neurosis of humanity. And sometimes individual believers can be safeguarded to a high degree against the risk of certain neurotic illnesses because, Freud thinks, their acceptance of the universal neurosis spares them the task of constructing a personal neurosis of their own. He may be thinking of the kind of pious windbag that we met way back in the first lecture with Euthyphro. Imagine the kind of annoying, self-righteous, pious person who is very self-satisfied with themselves, very complacent. They're happy. They think they're happy. They have no real self-knowledge, right? They're infuriating and all that. But their lives are relatively healthy, at least by their own standards. They're relatively happy. In fact, they're annoyingly happy, right? They're not bothered by all the kinds of guilt and introspection that you and I are bothered by because we're so much more sensitive than those pious windbags. You know how that goes, right? Those kinds of people are sort of enjoying this universal neurosis, and therefore they don't suffer from the more personal neurosis of you and I who have our own private obsessions. Something like that, Freud is thinking, I think. So the point is that for Freud, as for Marx, if you want to know the true meaning of religion, you have to look at something that's hidden from the individual believer, right? And that's a key move in a lot of postmodern philosophy. It's also a key move in subsequent interpretations of religion for the past 150 years or so. The hermeneutics of suspicion tends to be exercised especially by sociologists and psychologists rather than by philosophers. Philosophers tend to, you know, attack religion head on. If they don't like it, they'll say, this isn't true. Whereas in the hermeneutics of suspicion, you're not talking about the truth or the falsehood of religion. You're talking about its meaning. Right, hermeneutics of suspicion tends to assume that religion is false. Freud and Marx both did. They just assume that, of course, religion is false. And then they ask about what it really means. Why do people really believe in it if it's obviously so false and silly? Well, it's because they have this universal neurosis, if you're Freud, or because it's this flower on the chain, if you're Marx. But the key point is that the meaning of religion is determined by factors that the believer in religion is not conscious of. Thus, what the hermeneutics of suspicion does is it rejects the epistemological individualism that we've seen in modern philosophy since Descartes and Locke. Right? For Descartes, for Locke, for Schleiermacher, the meaning of our beliefs is determined by our own conscious acceptance of those beliefs. Right? What we believe and what we're conscious of are really the same thing. Right? Whereas for Marx and Freud, what we think we believe is not quite the same thing as what we actually believe. What we're conscious of is not quite the same thing as the real meaning of our consciousness. So the individual doesn't determine the meaning of his or her own consciousness for Marx or Freud. And that's a postmodern approach, many philosophers now think. It rejects that turn to the subject of modern philosophy. It rejects the epistemological individualism. So that may actually be a promising approach to philosophy of religion in certain ways. Because after all, if your religion does give aid and comfort to the powerful in society and doesn't actually help free those who are oppressed, then you might want to be thinking critically about your religion, right? So the kind of criticism of religion that's inherent in the hermeneutics of suspicion has a real value, I think, for religious people. We do have to worry about the kind of religious believer who seems to be living out a social or universal neurosis. We do have to worry about the kind of unhealthy religion which looks really like a form of psychological illness. On the other hand, I'd suggest on behalf of religion, that there are some limitations to the hermeneutics of suspicion. Religion has a whole lot of meanings. Yes, there probably are some hidden meanings to religion. I mean, Orthodox believers are used to the notion that their religious tradition is richer than they themselves know about, that they're committed to a set of beliefs that goes beyond just what they themselves are master of. But after all, what the individual does think he or she believes ought to count. You shouldn't simply ignore what the individual believer thinks he or she believes. That's a little bit too arrogant and, in a sense, kind of self-righteous. Okay, you believe this stuff about religion, but I'll tell you what you really believe. That's what some sociologists and psychologists are saying. That seems to be a little bit arrogant, it seems to me. Another limitation of the hermeneutics of suspicion is that the interest that religion serves includes more than just the status quo. Right? It doesn't just help us cope with our neuroses for Freud. It doesn't just help us cope with social oppression and continue with social oppression in that way. Sometimes it gives people reasons for rebelling. There's such a thing as liberation theology, after all. Sometimes it gives people moral strength to resist. Some people resisted Hitler for religious reasons, right? The opposite side of the coin is many sociologists like religion because it supports social stability, right? They like it for the same reason that Marx doesn't like it. Right, Durkheim thinks that religion supports our social life in a way that's good for us, not in a way that's oppressive. Likewise, there's a similar variety in psychological interpretations of religion. There's a lot of psychologists who think that religion functions in a way that's good for our psychic life. For every Freud, there's a Jung, Carl Jung, J-U-N-G, who thinks that religion plays a symbolic function in our psychic life that's absolutely indispensable. Religions, for Jung, are systems of healing for psychological illnesses. They're not neuroses. They're systems of healing for neuroses. So for every Freud, there's a Jung. For every Marx, there's a Durkheim. Right? For every sociologist who thinks that religion is an oppressive symbol system, there's a sociologist who thinks that religion is essential for our symbolizing our own social life. And for every psychologist who thinks that religion is a neurosis, there's a psychologist who thinks that religion is a form of healing. And yet, to make it more complicated, even the psychologists who like religion, like Jung, will often interpret religion as if it meant something different than the individual believers think, as if Christianity symbolized something about our collective unconscious, for Jung, something that we need to know about our collective unconscious. But Jung doesn't take the story about crucifixion and resurrection literally, and most Christian believers do. So even the sociologists and psychologists who like the symbolic function of religion tend to share with the hermeneutics of suspicion this tendency to interpret the meaning of religion in ways different than the believers in religion themselves interpret it. You might say, with friends like this, does religion really need enemies? And that's something to be aware of in the intense back and forth of modern intellectual life about the meaning of religion. Both the friends and the enemies of religion will sometimes interpret religion differently than the believers of religion actually do. And that's why it's very important for the believers in religious traditions to be able to interpret their religion for themselves using the best tools of philosophy and critical thought. And that's something we'll get to in our last lecture.